It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. I missed a button there, but yeah, I'm live. This program is live. I said yesterday there was a chance I wouldn't be, but here I am, because I got up today and the weather was just garbage, and it was cold and it was rainy, and so I did my speech therapy virtually online. And so now I'll be going down there on the 23rd to Huntington, to this lovely campus of Marshall University. And so we get a program this evening, because I wasn't having to go drive hell-bent for leather back from Huntington to make it in time for air. I hope you're as glad that I'm here as I'm glad that I'm here. Hi, I'm Robin. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza, madcap that it is, that takes place in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, all time zones in between, and the great globe round. And if you head over to the chat room now, well, you'll be greeted by the early arrivers. Yes, you'll be greeted by Anatole and Squeaky and Stockton Larry, and capably moderated by pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all around great guy, Brother Bishop Steve from Georgistan. And this is a coded message to Brother Bishop Steve, because Brother Bishop Steve is a devotee of good sauerkraut. And we do, we do some food porn here from time to time. I recently discovered that, I've been quite fond of the Sauvergne brand of sauerkraut out of Wisconsin for a while now. And they had a dill one and a caraway seed with beer one. Oh, my God, I found the Sriracha sauerkraut. Yes. Yes, 1,000 times yes on a hot dog with some good mustard. Brother Bishop Steve, you want to try that, okay? I mean, it's canned. It's canned. So it's not fermenting in the jar. There aren't any lids blowing up or anything. Steve asking, is it cooked? Yeah, it doesn't have the living fizzy bubbly probiotics. I think it's a brand called, Bubbies? And it's a lot.
It's alive.
Yeah. But it's, on a hot dog, it is incomparably good. So just that to get us started, but I'm getting ahead of myself. Every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different, because this program would not exist without the kindness of the community that keeps it afloat. So we send out thanks on this 9th day of March, 2022. We send out thanks to our 9th day of the month subscribers via PayPal. And that means thanks to James. Thank you, James. And thank you to Khalil. And thank you to Maribel. Thank you to Ralphs. And again, thanks to everybody who answered the when oil companies choose, you lose 2-for-1 challenge yesterday and overnight. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for being part of that. That means that our present fundraising goal is only $650. So what that means is we got $50 on Monday, yesterday, and today, and we would actually be caught up. So thanks for getting us that close. Now I wouldn't be kidding if I said it seems like we just get eaten alive, and we do. So there are early bills that still remain to be paid, and if we could knock down that $650, it would be some kind of stupendous. And by the way, program note, Shentel has been, that's the internet service provider, you'll recall. Shentel has been nothing if not sketchy as today. All the little packets stopped passing several times today. So once again, now there's no thunderstorms or anything passing through. No frogs and locusts or rivers of blood or anything like that. Hey, but it's internet in West Virginia, so, you know, consider. I mean, my virtual speech therapy session got cut short today because Shentel just went, meh. But that being the case, if the program disappears in medias res today, you'll know it's because the internet service provider, yeah, crashed. So, this is, at least nominally, Prayer Meeting Wednesday. And I, of course, am at least nominally Archpope, Uber Rabbi, Ultimate Imam, Animated Animist, Antagonized Agnostic, Absolutist Abbess, Naughty Nun, Robin Kincaid, and this is the Cathedral of Common Sense. And we've got some stuff to work with in that regard. Why not? Let's start with the culture wars. Sure. Brother Deacon Asa made me aware of this one. And anybody surprised? Don't be surprised. Now, the Super Bowl was a month ago. But when it comes to being butthurt, nobody does butthurt like the conservative, good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, gun-dementalist, ammo-sexual, Christian Republicans. And I haven't seen a hissy like this since the great brown nipple of doom with Janet Jackson of decades past. Oh yeah, but once again, you know, it was as much about the brown as it was the nipple back then, and it doesn't change now. The tax-free Dodge, known as 1 Million Moms, and they are a sub-Dodge of the larger Dodge, the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mazzuppistan, whose leader, James Wildman, started his little hustle, back when I was just starting as a little pimply-faced gospel DJ in Northwest Alabama. And he got the Dodge started being mad at Warner Brothers cartoons. Probably because Bugs was all the time, you know, running around in drag. I don't know. Between, what was her name? Henrietta the Monster? And Bugs riding around on corpulent horses while wearing Wagnerian Wagnerian girl gear. I was watching that at a very tender age. And I wonder, right? But that's how he got it. And of course, he objected. He said, these cartoons are making children drop anvils on their parents. No, they weren't. But nonetheless, the 1 million moms is, like I said, a sub-dodge of the larger dodge that is the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi. Stand, oh, amen, sweet Jesus. Yeah. And the 1 million moms, they're angry. And they're not just so much, and you know how it is when, you know how it is when a Southern mama gets upset. She, you know, I'm not mad at you as much as I'm disappointed. And so they put together a petition, and they've already found 10,000 mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking idiots to sign it, because they are disgusted. That was the word they used. Disgusted. With the Super Bowl's halftime show, which was, you know, a month ago. Usually, even if I'm truly disgusted, I can somehow manage to moderate my disgust. But the thing is, their disgust is, let's say, fungible. Their disgust, you know, when I get disgusted at something, and God knows I am, we'll talk in a little bit about what's being, and again, not, you know, yeah, my transness has something to do with it, but it's the Republicans are the ones who have chosen to make an issue of this, so it's on them, not me, and it just happens to be a news story. We'll talk about a further development in the Republican war on children. But, and I am disgusted over it, and I really struggle to not say things that I ought not say, even though this is the internet and the FCC has no jurisdiction, because certain other agencies might have jurisdiction nonetheless if I were to say what was really on my mind. Anyway, they're disgusted. Over the Super Bowl halftime show, headlined by Dr. Dre, and what really has these good God fearing Christian mamas and their enablers and what people who send in their Social Security checks and things like that, what has them worked up is the nearly naked dancers. And of course, we have to take into account pronunciations here, because the American Family Association is a Southern organization, which means that triggers the definitional difference between NAKED and NEKKID. Naked, of course, we all know is the state of having no clothing on. You know, kind of like Adam and Eve were, but before. Well, before that apple pie and that talking snake. And naked, on the other hand, is the state of having no clothes on and being up to something. And there was nearly naked backup dancers dancing behind that Dr. Dre. And you know what? I didn't know this, but he's not really a doctor. No. Not really. He just calls himself that. When it came around time for 50 Cent to do his hit In the Club, well, some of the backup dancers had little short skirts on, and they danced like they were in, oddly enough, a club. I know. And then there was another group of backup dancers. What was wearing cheerleader costumes? God, that show was a trans girl's dream come true. And the skirts were like at their knees, and you could see their naked calves. Now the fact that the 1 million moms are all worked up about naked calves, further reinforces the fact that that I'm glad that, like, Tim Wildman, who took over from Donald Wildman, I said James earlier, I think, but it is Donald. He took over, Tim, the son, took over for the creepy old daddy because, American evangelical organizations are a lot like the duchies and principalities of feudal Europe, where the oldest son just takes it all. Primogeniture, right? But they've got more in common with, like, you know, the Taliban and ISIS than at first blush people who aren't schooled in this might realize. Don't like gambling? Don't like gambling. Don't like dancing? Don't like dancing. Don't like women? Don't like women. Don't like women's bodies? Don't like women's bodies. Want women to stay covered up and hidden from view? Want women to stay covered up and hidden from view. Don't like gambling? Don't like gambling. Don't like booze? Don't like booze. I guess it's best for us all if they continue to hate each other, because God knows. It's sort of like an antimatter stupid friends, super friends, I'm sorry. But more than anything, most of the performers were black, and the 1 million moms said the show was extremely vulgar. Nearly naked backup dancers were shaking their scantily clad rear ends. I object to them calling them rear ends. I think it would be slightly more decent just to call them posteriors. Mm-hmm. And they said they were nearly naked other numerous body parts as they twerked around the stage. Why, you dirty-minded people, you 1 million moms, you shouldn't even know what twerking is. The website says the dancers, and of course there's dancing, and we all know that's all the devil's boogie. The dancers incorporated stripper-like moves, such as spread leg squats. Oh, no. Crotch shots. Were they watching the same Super Bowl? And a full view of a couple of female backsides. And then, of course, the argument. How are children supposed to learn about respect and dignity when this is what they see on one of the world's biggest stages? Many families watch the Super Bowl together. Therefore, the halftime show should be family-friendly. Did they miss the beer ads? And the lyrics to the songs were inappropriate. These are some seriously cranky, unhappy people. Oh, dear God. Okay. They said that their petition starts, "I am completely disgusted with Super Bowl 56's halftime show. My family asked the NFL to keep the entertainment family friendly, and instead you delivered barely dressed performers and backup dancers twerking all over the stage. You should be ashamed to be associated with such a vulgar performance." Vulgar. You see, when you say it that way, you get the full emotional force of it. Vulgar! And, of course, all those signatories to the petition. Can I see the vulgar? I want to get extra disgusted. Can I see the vulgar some more? And they don't. The petition, which I looked at earlier, you know, it doesn't ask for any action. So all it is a fundraising dodge, and it's all tax free. Hallelujah. We'll change our hymns to ATMs. And let's see, Charlie Cook, he got all upset. Calling the NFL the League of Sexual Anarchy. Language is so much fun. Because anytime I see the word anarchy, I actually remember the etymology of the word. In the ancient Greek city-states, oh God, she's gone off into ancient history again. Isn't she ancient enough for all of us? That's good, Brother Deacon. But anarchy in ancient Greek city-states were led by what were called archons. And they were a bunch of cranky old fart dudes. And in Greek, the word an in front of something means without. A good example, you know, a similar concept, a sinecure, is a Latinate phrase that means without a care. So an anarchon is without archons. And so I guess Charlie Kirk is saying that the scantily clad, nearly naked backup dancers for Super Bowl 56's halftime show was without gross old guys. And I don't know about y'all, but I'm kind of grateful for that. Can you imagine some sort of long-locked, balding, bearded old Greek dude in a chiton showing his bare calves and twerking all over the state? But then again, they're evangelical Christians, and their kinks know no bounds. They're a weird lot. So no, it's not earth-shattering, but it's a place to start. And then there's some creepy old dude bro named Nick Adams, which grosses me out because some of Ernest Hemingway's finest short stories featured a character that was very much autobiographical named Nick Adams. And believe you me when I tell you that the fictitious Nick Adams of Hemingway's short stories is a far better human being. It was, for instance, Nick Adams who hiked through the burned-over woods that was actually the Fox River in Michigan, but Hemingway retitled it the Big Two-Hearted River. And the burned-over landscape, he just gets all PTSD'd all to hell because he's back home from the ravages and burned-over landscapes of, say, the battlefields of World War I, and he's sort of trying to recover himself. But yeah, that character is Nick Adams. Another short story, Up in Michigan. Wow. They're good. And this guy, this Nick Adams, best-selling author endorsed by President Trump, founder president of One Flag USA, presidential appointee, Australian by birth, Robert, we got to talk. American by choice. Philosophile. Hey. So, he's a philosophile. I see. And Brother Deacon Asa made me aware of this. Nick Adams said, Ted Nugent, Kid Rock, and Lee Greenwood would put on a better halftime show than these hoodlums. And by the way, I stand corrected because Brother Deacon Asa informed me only moments ago. 1 million moms know not what they talk about. Dr. Dre is, in fact, a doctor. To whom do you think artists go when their album sales are ailing? Okay, that's a cowbell. First cowbell of the evening goes to Brother Deacon Asa. Yeah. Ron and Raleigh, you got it. You got it, my friend. Really? Ron asks, isn't vulgarity like art and obscenity in the eyes of the beholder? Remember the Star Trek episode, Return of the Archons? Oh, yes. And, you know, anytime you hear, you know what, it's that Antifa, they're a bunch of anarchists. So, I don't know, maybe it's true, maybe they don't have any creepy old, the long-locked, going bald, bearded dude bros in short kilts. In fact, on January the 6th, 2021, when a bunch of maggots, thousands of them, engaged in an insurrection and tried to overturn constitutional governance in the United States of America, I do believe there were some creepy old dude bros in kilts. So that means they were definitely, well, I don't know, were they leaders? If they were leaders, then it was definitely, they were archons, and there it was not anarchy. By the way, Stephen, New York, Super Bowl Cyphron. 10,000 people on a petition, 112 million watched the Super Bowl. Percentage who were offended? Oh, good God, this is hilarious. I love it when y'all do the Cyphron for me. The percentage of Super Bowl viewers who were disgusted. They were disgusted. 0.008928571428571%. I think we can round down to 8570 since it was 71. So, never mind. So that now let me remember. Let's see. That first aught is your tenths. The second aughts is your hundredths. So that means 0.08 and change of 1%. I think the 1 million moms have a long way to go. Such a long way to go. Such a long way to go. That's for you, Joy, in Ann Arbor. I know. And so, you know, just a little amuse-bouche to get us started on this prayer meeting Wednesday. But subject line: war is not civil. Oh, wait a minute. Brother Deacon Asa says, wait, they were disgusted? Hashtag, fuck their feelings. Yeah, because that's what the maggots put on you. Fuck your feelings. Right. Yeah. Oh, by the way, Nick, the ratio for Nick Adams over on Twitter was really good. Ted and Agent Kid Rock and Lee Greenwood would put on a better halftime show than these hoodlums. Nick, dude. Have you ever heard the lyrics of Ted Nugent or Kid Rock? No, I mean, Lee Greenwood. He's very, very, very wholesome. But Ted Nugent and Kid Rock, I mean, Ted Nugent has a song that's called Wang Dang Sweet Pin Tang. And, well, Kid Rock, he once rhymed the word things with the word things. And by the way, all kidding aside, seriously, Robert, need a note from you, buddy. Been thinking about you because I know what's going on in along that nearly 1,000-mile strip between Victoria and Queensland in New South Wales. I need to know you're okay. I saw a couple of other friends from Oz who marked themselves safe on Facebook. This is some horrendous shit flooding that's been going on. And, of course, you know, if I know Robert, and we've been communicating for a long time, he's probably sitting there, hashtag climate change. But no, Nick Adams got dragged righteously. And I'm terribly, terribly glad he did. Hoodlums. Somebody needs to teach Nikki about dog whistle dog whistle language. Or maybe not. Maybe he already knows. Because maybe he typed hoodlums when he meant, oh, I don't know, a different word. And speaking of different words, there's always this. There's some dude bro out there who has a podcast. We talked about him a little bit. He headed up a white nationalist, white supremacist, anti-Semitic, racist rally that was attended by one or the other of the dipshit twins. I can't remember if it was Clanny Oakley or Marginal Trailer Queen. But Nick Fuentes said that America well, let's just let it come out of his own mouth, because I don't feel like having to go and, like, you know, gargle.
They're trying to cram this bullshit down our throat, these people that are not like us. You know what Americans want? It's pretty clear when they elected Trump. Trump got up there and he didn't say, hi, we're going to bring the workers of the world unite. You know, black, Hispanic, and white workers for populism. Let's unionize DoorDash. Trump went up there and said, they're bringing drugs, crime, they're rapists. You know, he said, I'm calling for a shutdown of Muslims coming into America. You know, we're going to say Merry Christmas. He was like this close to saying the N-word. You know, like, that's what America want. That's what this.
You know, it always makes me chuckle when a right wing white supremacist says that he wants a president who says that word in public. Of course, remember, if fact witnesses are to be believed, the outtakes from The Apprentice are just one long reel of Nitwit Nero saying that word. A lot. But the idea that this guy has a... Has anybody told him that his last name isn't, you know, white, Anglo-Saxon, Protestant? No? Oh, well. Maybe he's like that old Dave Chappelle character. Yeah, what was his name? Clayton, whatever. Anyway, war is not civil. Joey writes, this past Sunday, March 6th, featured several war-related events, with the two most prominent being the Dred Scott decision and the Alamo down in San Antonio, Texas. Of course, the Dred Scott decision featured an idiot judge named Roger Taney. You know, I think idiot is too gentle, Joey. White supremacist carries all the freight necessary in that situation, providing the majority opinion, which was largely the doctrine of John C. Calhoun, that devil from South Carolina, probably the worst vice president ever, save for maybe Dick Calhoun Cheney. Can Spiro Agnew not get any love anymore? I mean, he was a pretty awful vice president. Calhoun defended slavery and the lawful right of slave owners to enslavers to move enslaved people into any territory, as well as supporting at one point in time Southern secession. He was dead, of course, well before the Civil War got started. Oh boy, here comes Jeffrey.
Yes, in my high mind, the highest court in the land provided a despicable decision that eventually led to the Civil War.
You know, Junior's following Jeffrey around a lot these days. Well, poor pun or not, it has to be said, the Dred Scott decision was a dreadful decision. Ugh. Junior, go to your room. Nonetheless, Jeffrey is feeling philosophical.
Yes, I will never understand why they would refer to the Civil War as civil. What the hell war is ever civil? I'd say just ask the people of Ukraine and Russia, as they are now participating in a civil war of sorts, considering so many people from Russia have relatives in Ukraine and vice versa.
Good point, fellas. With that in mind, March 6th was the anniversary of the 1917 Russian Revolution, which marked the beginning of the revolt against Tsarist rule following the lack of food in Petrograd, leading to the abdication by Nicholas II and the beginning of the Communist Party rule in Russia. Junior, I thought I told you to go to your room. You mentioned Petrograd. Well, here's some fuel for thought. Isn't Petrograd a certain type of gasoline? No, Junior. No, son.
Petrograd was a place in Russia which lasted for 10 years, from 1914 to 1924, and later became Leningrad, and the second largest city in Russia, before being dissolved in 1991 following the breakup of the USSR.
Well, however, I would say, as of now, the Petro in Russia is receiving a low grade around the world. He's a clever boy. Too clever by half. Oh, you know, I'm afraid they're going to have a bad influence on Joey 2, the kangaroo. I worry about that little girl.
Australia produces about 11% of the world's oil in the outback, and then sends most of its oil to the Far East.
Thank you, Joey. At least there were no horrible puns. As we mentioned earlier, on March 6th of 1836, Santa Anna and his army came to San Antonio to quash the attempts of Texans like David Crockett and Stephen F. Austin and others to... David Bowie, wasn't he there? To take back the region. That was on me. But don't blame Joey or the little kangaroo or Junior or the giraffe for that one. Wasn't David Bowie at the no, that's mine. To take back the region, Santa Anna, in a 13-day rampage, wiped out the Texas Army and left nearly 200 dead.
Yes, Texas attempted to divorce itself from Mexico, and Mexico actually said, remember the alimony.
Oh, dear God.
Although today Texas is the largest producer of oil in this country, they did not have oil back then, but what Texas did have was a vast interest in making sure slavery was alive and well in that state, because the word Alamo translated as cottonwood, and there was plenty of cotton to be harvested in the woods of Texas, not to mention the fields.
True. I was hoping we'd get around to noting the fact that the so-called War for Texas Independence was actually a war. It was to the Civil War what the Spanish Civil War was to World War II. It was an early attempt to defeat a form of freedom, because the Mexicans had gotten rid of chattel slavery and didn't much like having it done in their territory. But the white Texans didn't see it the same way. By the way, it's worth noting that historians now believe, rather than fighting desperately to the end, David Crockett, who had been kind of a hard luck case all of his life, died on his knees begging for his life from the victorious Mexicans. Well, Joey wraps it all up. Even in Washington, it was clear what drove the Texans. Abolitionists denounced their insurgency as the world's first pro-slavery rebellion. Former President John Quincy Adams charged Texans with the notion that the war raging in Texas was a war for the establishment of slavery where it was abolished. It is not a servile war, but a war between slavery and emancipation, and every possible effort has been made to drive us into this war on the side of slavery. The Texas revolt may have been precipitated by ham-handed Mexican attempts to exercise control over its territory, but the underlying cause was the one thing American immigrants and the Mexican government had disagreed on since the beginning: the preservation of slavery. Mexico actually wanted freedom for all, while the supposed freest country in the world wanted to continue to enslave people. Yeah. This has been Joey's Journal for Wednesday, the 9th day of March, 2022, with Giraffe wondering if Texas will ever have a good, decent civil government ever again. I gotta take issue with the form of the question, Joey. When has Texas or any of the other Confederate states ever had a decent civil government? That's one of the things that I ponder every time I go south, the fact that Reconstruction 1.0 was cut off before it could accomplish its goals, and what the South needs more than anything else is Reconstruction 2.0, And that's part and parcel of what you see in these attempts to suppress voters, to gerrymander minority populations out of having any possible influence on an election. I don't know if there's actually ever been good government below the Mason-Dixon line. Maybe we'll discuss that someday. Meme Correction Department, Scary Jerry writes, no, that's marginal trailer queef. Stop that. That's a little misogynist. But I get your point. I'm going to stick with marginal trailer queen. I really want to know, Ron in Raleigh says, what will be the approved story of the Alamo that will be taught in Texas schools, and how close to the actual story will it be? I'm asking for a Davy Crockett fan. Oh, God. The approved story of the Alamo will be that brave white freedom fighters tried to withhold the burgeoning hordes of Mexicans trying to invade Merca. That's the story, and they're sticking to it. Because, see, if you taught the actual history of the Alamo, which was an attempt to engage in an insurrection against the lawful and legitimate Mexican government over the issue of slavery, well, you know what all these anti-CRT bills are all about. They say it outright. They don't want any little white children to feel, to have a sad over something as evil as slavery. Because little white children, unless they're trans, are not allowed to be sad. At least not for those reasons. The little white children can be sad over things that get made up by their parents, their Sunday school teachers, their pastors, their Christian Academy teachers, their Republican representatives in state houses and city councils and county commissions and all the way to the Congress of the United States. They're allowed to be made sad over the fact that, well, I don't know, somebody's trying to go to the potty that matches their gender. They might even be allowed to become homicidally furious over that. But they can't be allowed to be made sad over the actual, uncontested, no kidding, real history of the United States of America. Yes, yes, as a matter of fact, Shorty in L.A., I am live now. This program is live as of the 9th day of March, 2022. Steve in New York, good government below the Mason-Dixon line. Macy-Dixon line. Steve says, FDR, Abe Lincoln, and some others. D.C. is below the Macy-Dixon line. Doug Wilder was a rather good governor in Virginia. But that's not the same as having good government in the Confederate States. None of them. I mean, for instance, you could make a compelling argument that Huey Long actually gave more of a damn about the working class in Louisiana-stan than others had, but he was still racist. And had more than a little bit of a, we say populist now for impulses that we would rather not tag with applicable, more modern political science terms. And somewhere here, yep, there it is. Somewhere here, I have a very, very old copy of a book called Every Man a King. It appears to be a first edition. for it shows only copyright 1933 by Huey P. Long. The epigram at the beginning of the book is from Goldsmith. Ill fares the land to hastening ills of prey, where wealth accumulates and men decay. It's even got black and white plates. A couple of pictures along the way. And it's it's lengthy. And Long would go on to become an early supporter of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. But it wouldn't last. Because by the time FDR was in office, Huey Long was excoriating FDR for not being ideologically pure enough. Wait a minute. Where have we heard that? Yes, he was. He was the 1930s version of a sparkle fart propelled unicorn cavalry member of the Purity Patrol. Well, that's a rather lengthy answer to both Ron and Raleigh and Steve in New York, but that's the nature of this program. Sometimes we just need a little bit of detail. And so that's what that was. But it is Prayer Meeting Wednesday. And so, I don't know, maybe a moment or two to consider something from the Christian's holy book. And what I'm talking about is Matthew 19. Somewhere around verse 14, where Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and semi-literate itinerant rabbi who wore a dress every day of their life, said, "Suffer little children, and forbid them not, to come unto me, for such is the kingdom of heaven." Not to get all preachy, but, you know, again, absolutist abscess. I'm not an abscess. I'm an abyss. And of course, this is the King James Version, and when we say suffer little children, we don't mean, oh, for instance, dropping several bombs on a children's hospital in Mariupol, Ukraine. No, to suffer means to allow in Elizabethan English. And Yeshua apparently had a soft spot for the little ones. And what comes before is, and this is a weird chapter, by the way. Matthew 19 is a strange chapter because it's the only place where Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and semi-literate itinerant rabbi who wore a dress every day of their life, actually talks about people that we might refer to as
trans.
And said, and started talking about eunuchs. Because the geniuses that were known as the disciples, I use geniuses sarcastically, they were talking about divorce and marital relations, and the geniuses said,
Well, if the man and his wife aren't getting along, isn't it good not to get married? And Jesus, answering them rather like a Zen master, said, "All men cannot receive this saying, save they to whom it is given." And then he says, and this is two verses before about suffering the little children, he says, "For there are some eunuchs which were so born from their mother's womb, and there are some eunuchs which were made eunuchs of men, and there be eunuchs which have made themselves eunuchs for the kingdom of heaven's sake, and he that is able to receive it, let him receive it." Now, he's not talking about the trans dudes, trans guys. But I think it's applicable. It's transferable. Then there were brought unto him little children that he should put his hands on them and pray, and the disciples rebuked them. Like I said, geniuses they weren't. But Jesus said, "Suffer the little children, and forbid them not to come unto me, for of such is the kingdom of heaven." And he laid hands on them and departed thence, giving rise to the ancient hymn, "Jesus loves the little children. You're not Jesus, get your hands off my kid," which is sung in churches by terrified parents all over the United States of America, even yea, verily, unto this day. Right. So, like I said, the forces of Vlad Putin and Mother Russia flattened the children's hospital in Mariupol, using, of course, airstrikes, air power. An online post from the city council of Mariupol said, "The Russian occupying forces have dropped several bombs on the children's hospital. The destruction is colossal. We don't know how many people were killed." And then Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky tweeted, "Mariupol, direct strike of Russian troops at the maternity hospital. People, children, are under the wreckage. Atrocity. How much longer will the world be an accomplice ignoring terror? Close the sky right now. Stop the killings. You have power, but you seem to be losing humanity." Hard to disagree. We are certainly losing the moral side of this. Oh, and by the way, it's worth noting that a former White House secretary who said Nitwit Nero had a fondness and downright admiration for tyrants and dictators, because, specifically, they can kill anyone they want. Stephanie Grisham, yesterday on The View, talked about the issue a bit. She was press secretary under Nitwit Nero, and said, "I think he feared Putin. I think he was afraid of him. I think that the man intimidated him, because Putin is a scary man, just frankly. I think he was afraid of him. I also think he admired him greatly. I think he wanted to be able to kill whoever spoke out against him. So I think it was a lot of that. In my experience with him, he loved the dictators. He loved the people who could kill anyone, including the press." Of course, I think we got to that issue
a hell of a lot earlier than The View did, because we were talking about that years ago. Because we all know that this program is so far out of the head of the general curve that, well, it's like we're on straight road. But no, back to Mariupol. Mother Russia, of course, says, we are definitely not drop many bombs on maternity hospital in Ukraine. It's ours now anyway. Why would we bomb hospital belong to us? And if hospital got bombed, probably bombed by Ukro-Nazis, controlled by Nazi Jew president of Ukraine, Zelensky. No, seriously. I'm definitely not targeting civilians, even though people say we targeted civilians and I'm sorry, civilians. We're not. Don't believe man behind curtain. There are 450,000 people who live in Mariupol. It's situated on the Sea of Azov. And it is a strategic, particularly strategic city for Ukraine because it provides them an outlet to the sea by which provisions can be imported. And they're still frantically digging in the rubble. Of what used to be a maternity hospital. Newborns don't handle bombings real well. Or missile strikes. We know that from past experience. And because I'm trying desperately to not start hollering that we need to get our World War III on, although my ability to do that is becoming less and less, and understanding as I do and as I think we do that truth is the first casualty of war, I mean, I can't tell you how much I wish we had not done this shit in the past. So that I could just sit here and say, well, you know, Jesus said suffer the little children, but I don't think this is what he meant. Bombing a maternity hospital flat. But see, I remember so well, too well. I remember the stories after the beginning of hostilities between Iraq and Kuwait. You remember April Glaspie, don't you? Because I've never been able to fully get her out of my mind. She was a fairly senior State Department employee, civil servant. And when our dear friend and partner in peace at the time, Saddam Hussein, cabled the United States State Department and said, "Hey, I got a little beef with Kuwait. I think they're slant drilling into my fields and stealing Iraqi oil, and I'd kind of like to make that stop. Y'all got a problem with that?" And of course, George H.W. Bush was president then, and April Glaspie cabled back, "The United States takes no position on Arab versus Arab conflicts." Remember that? History is so cool sometimes. And so Saddam Hussein saw that as, well, okay, then I can solve this myself. And he attacked Kuwait. And shortly after that, as the world looked on in horror, suddenly there were stories about vicious Iraqi troops who had overrun a maternity hospital in Kuwait City and begun just randomly, and I know younger people are like, what? Because you probably weren't even, some of you weren't even born yet. But the evil marauding hordes of Iraqis had overrun a Kuwait City maternity hospital and were just casually tossing precious little newborn Kuwaiti babies out of high windows. It was reminiscent of the threat of Henry V outside the gates of Harfleur. Because Shakespeare puts into puts into the English king's mouth some really, really graphic stuff. And I won't subject you to my Shakespeare. We'll let a pro do it.
I had resolved the governor of the town. This is the latest parle we will admit. Therefore, to our best mercy, give yourselves, or like to men proud of destruction, defy us to our worst. For as I am a soldier, if I begin the battery once again, I will not leave the half-achieved Harfleur, till in her ashes she lie buried. Therefore, you men of Harfleur, take pity of your town and of your people, whilst yet my soldiers are in my command. Whilst yet the cool and temperate wind of grace o'erblows the filthy and contagious clouds of heady murder, spoil, and villainy. If not, why, in a moment, look to see the blind and bloody soldier with foul hand defile the locks of your shrill, shrieking daughters, your fathers taken by the silver beards and their most reverent heads dashed to the walls, your naked infants spitted upon pikes, whilst the mad mothers, with their howls confused, do break the clouds. What say you? Will you yield?
Sound familiar? And somehow, Kenneth Branagh in Henry V, I mean, that made the little hair stand up on the back of my neck. It's more chilling, but in, well, the early 1990s, what we had instead of Henry V and Shakespeare was a propaganda machine that was going full blast. And shrieking about little Kuwaiti babies being tossed from hospital windows to be dashed upon the ground. And the world was sickened and horrified. There was only one problem. It was all a fucking lie. It didn't happen. At all. It was entirely a fiction, as much as that speech is a fiction in Henry V, because Shakespeare wasn't there. This was 200 or more years before Shakespeare was born, and nobody was sitting there transcribing Henry V. Now, rape and pillage was quite real during those times. Just as it was very real when the Russian forces overran Germany and raped anything that a Russian soldier could rape. War is hell, ma'am, William Tecumseh Sherman is said to have uttered to a Southern woman, upset that he was barbecuing everything from Vicksburg, Mississippi to Charleston, South Carolina. And I despise the fact that I have to think of things like this when I read the story of a bomb-flattened maternity hospital in Mariupol, Ukraine. I'm inclined to believe the story and other stories, not just out of Mariupol, but other parts of Ukraine where Russian soldiers are said to be running wild and slaughtering a civilian population. There were no cameras at Harfleur. There were certainly no cameras recording marauding Iraqis tossing babies out the window in Kuwait City. But this past weekend, there was damn sure a camera when a mortar round landed in the midst of a safe passage area in a town outside Kyiv, and a mother, her 8-year-old, and her 16-year-old, and a family friend were all reduced to their constituent parts and had the universe, the very universe itself, end for them. And so I don't know. It feels like every one of these, I mean, I was asking the question a week ago, if fucking up a nuclear plant and possibly unleashing deadly radiation all over Europe isn't enough reason to stop them, what is? But we didn't. And now you have the murder, and you know, at least Shakespeare has the common decency to use the word murder and to describe the villainy of his conquering troops. But no, Vlad Putin and the people whose asses he has his hand up to make them speak. Oh, no, we will not bomb precious hospital of newborn babies. No, we do not. And we have, and we are not without modern history. There is film footage of Nanking and what the Empire of Japan did to that city. We know full well what the Third Reich did in city after city after city. We know how they responded to the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. We know what an abattoir Stalingrad became. And we know what we on our side did. We know about the German bombing of Coventry, and we know how Bomber Harris of the RAF insisted upon exacting revenge in the non-military target city of Dresden. Dresden, by the way, where Vlad Putin was posted back when he was a Lieutenant Colonel KGB spook. Ron and Raleigh pointing out, people still believe that Saddam had or has WMDs. That's why they win the propaganda and culture wars. They believe any lie they're told. We're in deep Bantha poodoo. Lord, I know. I know. And Stephen, New York, subject line, Children and Women's Hospital, World War III. I think we have to engage now. There's no reason, as I see it, to sit it out. With a note, with a link to an article from Fortune, as far as World War III, we're already in World War III. We have been for some time. Fiona Hill, former director of the U.S. National Security Council, recently said in an interview with Politico this past Monday, outlining the current state of the world. And I'm not trying to be a sparkle fart propelled unicorn cavalry purity patrol member. War is not to be entered into, just like the marriage vows say, lightly. And I get the sense that what we're doing is we're waiting in Latvia, Estonia, Lithuania, Poland. We're waiting for Russia to roll across one of those frontiers. And then it's game on. Strategically, we may also be buying time. Because, no, you do not move armies on a moment's notice. If we remember the run-up to this nightmare in Ukraine, it took Putin quite a while to get all that force on the Ukrainian border from both Russia and Belarus. We responded and started sending troops into the border areas. But sending 8,000 troops into Poland, well, that's not an effective army against a marauding Russian horde. So I don't know. You tell me. And I mean that sincerely. I would love to hear your thoughts. Because after an entire lifetime of refusing to see things in black and white, because things are seldom black and white, but instead variations on a multitude of shades of gray, I can't just turn around and see black and white in high contrast at the blink of an eye. So, Al Jazeera with an article that Steve provided, Steve in New York, the Red Cross in Ukraine. This situation is really apocalyptic for people. It is getting worse. They are running out of essential supplies, Ewan Watson, a spokesman for the International Committee of the Red Cross, said. And I do not doubt his veracity. And there are things, there are questions I have that I can't come up with a decent answer for. There's, for instance, the fact that, and it came as a bit of a surprise, when Polish government said that it wanted to fly 28 MiGs to the Ramstein Air Base in Germany, and the American government said, John Kirby, we were talking about him the other day, the Pentagon spokesman, said, we will continue to consult with Poland and our other NATO allies about this issue and the difficult logistical challenges it presents. but we do not believe Poland's proposal is a tenable one. And, of course, Vlad Putin had previously said, you know, if you give any aircraft to Ukraine, we will take this as tantamount to joining the war, and it will spur the Russian retaliation. And the thing is, the idea of providing the MiGs didn't even come up when Secretary of State Anthony Blinken was having conversations with the Polish government in the previous week. And I have seen people in social media saying, fuck it, call his bluff. He won't use his nukes. He doesn't dare. And I don't know what to make of that either. Oh, Todd, I'm sorry. I didn't see that early enough. I don't know if we can go that far backward or not. Would you perhaps be able to elaborate on the connection between Cinco de Mayo and the Mexican slavery experience? Well, that was a Mexican battle against Napoleon III or something, who had been placed in puppet control of Mexico. If I got that, and Cinco de Mayo, 5th of May, is actually a small skirmish that got turned into got turned into a reason to sell really bad tequila at restaurants and bars on May the 5th, or for Nitwit Nero to mark the holiday with a taco salad bowl. Eesh. So we are well into the second hour of the program, and quite the filibuster. Someone is on the stress line. Why shouldn't we find out? Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Robin. It's Dave in the barn.
Hey, Dave. How are you?
I've had better days. I'm dealing with a friend of mine whose husband's locked up for domestic battery and assault.
Oh, no.
And, the prosecutor put a no-contact order on them at her request, but she's now violating that with her husband, and he's crying to me about nobody understands, and I'm like, well, you can go here, here, and here to get help, and, she's yelling at me when I'm trying to explain things like why the prosecutor or his public defender aren't returning her calls and things like that. I pointed out they're trying to preserve their case. And she's not listening. This is the fourth time he's been charged with something like this, and they've ratcheted it up to I think the highest is what they call a class 5 felony, but that's only a few years in prison at most. The last time he got in trouble, I went to court with her. And I told him, I said, the next time it happens, you and I are done. You know, don't come looking to me for help. Now, I'm willing to help her. I still am. But I got so ticked off today, I told her, because she keeps defending him. Well, it's while he was blacked out. That's no excuse. If I've learned anything listening to you over the years, the question in the courts is, did he do it? If yes, then.
Well, and not only that, Dave. And this number goes way back to the early to mid 90s. But I could remember handling domestic violence cases, and God, the statute was so screwed up, at least here in West Virginia at the time, probably all over the country. But what would happen, and this is just what it was, probably to a certain extent still is, the statute set it up as a race to the telephone. And so if she gets to the phone and she dials 911 and she and gets the cops to come out, back then the law was such that dude was going to jail, no questions asked. And you know, usually there would be some evidence of physical force, you know, domestic violence having taken place.
Well, tearing a ligament in her hand is enough, yeah.
Well, so what would happen is the hearing would eventually be scheduled, and the victim would show up in court, and I'd have a stack of like 40 misdemeanor files to handle in one day, and I'd get to her file. And we'd go in the conference room, and we'd sit down, and I would take her information. And usually what would happen would be right after we got past what's your name, what's my name, it would be, I want to drop the charges. And I'm not being facetious, and this shit used to break my heart. And so let me finish. I had had some continuing education on domestic violence, and I would explain, I would say, is this the first time he's done it? And as often as not, she would say, well, no. I said, and is this the first time you have come in to drop the charges? Well, no. And at that point, Dave, I would say, okay, here's the reality. And this was the reality back then, as I had been taught. Women who were victims of domestic abuse will be victimized by their abusers 8 times before one of two things happens. They either leave, or they die.
Well, I asked her, how long has he been doing this? Now, understand, her youngest child is 9 years old. She told me, well, he started after their second daughter was born, and it's continued constantly. Today, I told her, I flat out told her, eventually, he's going to kill you because the violence and the amount of violence is escalating. He did this after a 3-day drunk. And I know this guy, every time he gets in trouble with the law, alcohol's involved, but he's trying to outdrink his late daddy, who was a professional alcoholic. And she had a concussion from where she'd gotten in a fight with some neighbors, and they beat the living bejesus out of her. And she's got cerebral palsy and a concussion. And he did this,
Jesus,
while she was recovering from the concussion. So we're talking with his previous domestic battery and domestic violence. They've upgraded it to a moderately severe level. But what I'm afraid of is exactly what you're talking about. I told her, I said, eventually he's going to kill you. And he was blaming the guy who called the cops on him. Well, he wouldn't be in jail now if Jose hadn't called the cops. I said, stop blaming Jose. Her husband's name is Junior. And I said, this isn't anybody's fuck up but Junior's. I said, quit defending him because there's nothing there to defend. And I just got so tired of hearing her whining about it. And I'm trying to be compassionate, but at the same time, I've got to give her a reality check because I've always been honest with both of them.
Dave, you're coming from a place. Is there a women's resource center? There's got to be where you are.
Yes, she won't avail herself of it.
What do you mean avail herself of it? Is it like
There's a place called the Julian Center. There's a place called the Julian Center that will help her. They run a women's shelter for victims of domestic violence. They'll even help her get a divorce if that's what she wants. They'll help her find a new place to live. I mean, there's plenty of resources.
So where is she on that chronological scale? Is this event one, or are we getting up close to leaves or dead at 8 or whatever the number was?
We're right in smack dab in the middle at number 4 that the cops know about. Okay, so we're talking maybe at 5 or 6.
Is there any way you can reach out to that center and just give them a précis of what's been going on and say, please, can you send someone out there who can counsel her on this? I mean, when you say she will not avail herself, it sounds to me like you're saying she will not pick up the phone and make the call.
Yeah, I may have to, Robin.
If there's a prosecution involved, then there should be a domestic violence victims rights advocate actively involved in the prosecutorial process.
There are victims advocates, but you're talking about a county that has over 1.7 million people.
And probably a victim advocate. Gotcha. Sure. It is, after all, Talibandiana.
Indianapolis is the only city in Indiana that actually has a dedicated public defender's office. Anywhere else in the state, lawyers are routinely assigned as public defenders on a rotating basis. I mean, if they do criminal defense work at all, they get on the list, and the courts just rotate them in and out. So that's what you're talking about there. They're not real good at following up. This is a guy who got on probation the last time, and one of his restrictions was not to drink. Well, he was drinking throughout the entire thing.
Yeah, unsupervised probation is funny that way.
Personally, after the second time, they should have parked his backside.
Yeah, but it costs money, Dave.
I know it costs money, but there's got to be goddamn consequences, or the murder rate's going to go even further.
You know, it's interesting. There's that word again, transferability. You're saying there has to be consequences or the murder rate is going to go higher. And I think that's transferable to Ukraine, isn't it?
Yeah.
How's that for a segue?
Speaking of which, now you know what a fan of history I am.
Certainly.
You mentioned Henry V, and Henry V's day, the commonly accepted customs of war was that if a town or a castle were stormed and did not submit to the besieger, and it was taken in a storm, then looting, raping, and pillaging was rife and rampant and expected. It's the way armies were paid. The phrase "cutting your nose off to spite your face" actually occurred from an incident where nuns cut their noses off trying to avoid being raped in a siege. So, you know, this kind of brutality is nothing new. And what the fuck does Putin care? There's been no consequences so far for the little son of a bitch. My cousin Griff had a great phrase of doing it. Somebody should drag him out from in front of his television set and set him up against a wall somewhere. I was thinking of Nikolai Ceausescu.
Yeah.
And I listened to an interview the BBC did with a man who got carjacked by Ceausescu and his wife in the closing days of his regime. The guy just went out to his car, and all of a sudden, the dictator of Romania was holding a gun on him. And they were driving around the roads, and he was muttering to himself about how he could get out of Romania, and he just needed to get away from everybody and all of this, and how he could rouse the troops. But remember, Romania was a very poorly armed, very poorly trained military. In their basic training, recruits were allowed 3 rounds of ammunition, not 3 hours of familiarization with the weapon, not 3 days of target practice, 3 rounds. And if they're using conscripts in Ukraine, you have non-disciplined troops, probably under poor command. And this is not a bug in the system. This is a feature where it gives Putin a certain degree of deniability. Well, I don't have control over the individual units on the field of battle, you know, which is,
well, see, you don't get to say that when you're the goddamn dictator.
Well, that's right. And speaking of dictators, I find it real interesting now that Whit Nero is out of office, that several of his close personal staff in the White House are now going, yeah, he loved dictators. And Rob and I seem to recall several years back, even before he became the would-be dictator of the United States, that we were talking about the same thing about the Orange Idiot. As far as being afraid of Putin, I think he was in love with him. I don't think it was fear. I think he wanted to be Putin's close personal friend. And he wanted to become a dictator by osmosis. And yeah. There would have been, and there still are people that will allow him to do that if given the chance. So this ain't over, folks. It ain't over when they screw his corkscrewed brain into the soil for the final time. May he rest in pieces. But because the disease is already running rampant. Now, I grew up part of my life in Texas, since you talked about the Alamo earlier. The Americans were encouraged to move into the state of Texas by the Mexican government to help them deal with the problem of Apache incursions. They only had about 3,000 or 4,000 Mexican citizens living in what is now Texas and southern Oklahoma, because the state of Tejas actually ran up into Oklahoma a little bit. What is present day Oklahoma?
Yeah, a little across the Red River.
And the Mexicans did away with slavery. You're right, there was a Napoleonic puppet there. Santa Anna had been dictator a couple of times. But on this one, frankly, this is one case where who do you root for? The people that would keep slaves or the dictator who is a brutal pain in the ass? You know, I think it always occurred to me, the story I was given, that the Alamo had no survivors. Well, if they had no survivors, how do we know the story? So I asked that question, and, well, it turns out there were survivors. But the story Texans tell themselves at the time was, well, they bravely held out for the last individual. No. No, from what I understand, David Crockett was captured and, like you say, begged for his life.
What happened to David Bowie?
Well, he died a century and a half or so later, a little over a century and a half later. If you're talking about David Jones, aka David Bowie,
I couldn't resist. I mean, him with his Arkansas toothpick.
Well, that was James Bowie.
Yeah, I know that's what they say, but I heard different on Art Bell.
Well, Art was also quite a bit of a humorist sometimes.
I'm playing here.
I know you are. I'm trying to play along, Robin.
Or maybe it was Alex Jones.
Oh God, no. You know, there was a maggot who left the United States after January 6th. And he went to the Ukraine to start his life over. And it seems that, he was talking about how wonderful the Russian freedom fighters were.
Oh, yeah, we talked about that, dude. He was from Texas.
And now I'm like, oh, geez.
Very, very few people know about Alex Jones's great-great-great-great-granddaddy, Zebediah Ephraim Jones, who was the founder of the Alamo Truth movement.
Okay. Well, it's died in the wool.
I'm working here. I'm working.
I know. I'm trying. But, okay, let's get this. You're doing the humorist. I'm playing the straight man who is not. Is
yeah, because I can't play straight. I can't play straight anymore.
Yes, I understand. And believe me, it can be a stretch for me sometimes. So work with me here, okay? Nobody heard us talking about this. It's just you and me and, you know, 10 or 12.
Oh, yeah, there's nobody listening. I mean, that's why, that's why we started the evening with a $650 fundraising goal, and we're still at $650.
Okay, everybody, give Robin a quarter, okay? As a matter of fact, give her several quarters. Throw them in the virtual basket there, and I promise you, we will continue the humor as long as we can. If I have to call in the big guns like Scott in San Diego and people like that, we'll do it.
I could always sing.
No, Robin, let's not inflict that on them. We haven't gotten to that point yet. But if we get into hour three, tune the pipes up, girl.
Sweet mystery of life, at last I found you. Never mind.
Set a give, Robin. Set a give.
Sec D, damn it. Sec D.
The thing is, I do have a question for Junior. I know his papa is going to Harvard now, and with the Lampoon and the Hasty Pudding Society, there's a well established punnery there. Does he attend the punnery school there? Because I think that he and Joey too would be well educated there, but the kid needs to work on his material.
Well, I mean, easy. He's little. He's little. He's young.
No, I applaud him for the effort. It's good. It's much better than most kids his age. But like they say in vaudeville, don't follow kids or animals. In Junior's case,
and in the circus parade, if you get stuck in the circus parade, if you get stuck behind the elephant, you're just fucked.
Well, who wants to be behind Republicans anyway? I mean, really. I know it's going to be difficult for him not to follow animals and children, being an animal child himself. But I think Junior has the makings of a fine punster. He definitely has his following in his dad's example, and I applaud him for that. After all, even a giraffe has to look up to somebody at some point.
Well, by the way, you invoked the name, you conjured Scott in San Diego, and he just said, that faint whirring noise you hear in the distance is the sound of Jeanette McDonald spinning in her grave. Sweet mystery of life, indeed. I always think of Madeline Kahn, but that's okay.
Well, you know, the thing is, Betty White, did an interview one time when they were talking about her early career. Jeanette McDonald she idolized her. And when she went to her first audition, she did a Jeanette McDonald song. So that's, it's weird how things go round and round in this community. But, you know, I think if we're going to deal with Putin, we're going to have to deal with the Russian military first, because they're probably, it looks from the outside looking in that something is desperately wrong. Either this guy has finally gone over the edge, or the only thing propping him up is the military. Because if he didn't have control of the military, they would have dragged him out and thrown him from the walls of the Kremlin.
Truth.
You know, or he would have retired to his dacha on the Black Sea and then suddenly come up dead after a year of not being seen. There's a long history of that kind of thing. The problem is we're going to have to, eventually it's going to come to a conflict, because he's not going to stop at Ukraine. And I think the Polish government is signaling that already, because they've seen this movie before. However, it had German subtitles back in the day.
Yeah.
I think that's why they were offering the aircraft to the Ukraine, the MiGs. And it does a nice thing for the Poles, because on the American aircraft that they would be receiving, their pilots are already qualified. They've already been trained to handle them. And they're far more advanced than the Soviet-era MiGs. So, but here, Hungary is not wanting them to do it because they still want trade with Russia. So, you're dealing with a dance equivalent to the run-up to World War I, where one country does one thing and then two other countries do something to counteract it,
You just opened the door to something that I've been thinking about. And that is, if we think back to the heady days of 1913... which of course led inexorably to 1914, there was a diplomatic problem, Dave, that people had run around signing treaties that other nations didn't necessarily know about. And so when the shooting started, a war sort of broke out because not everybody knew who had to jump in because somebody else got shot at. And I am not so, I'm not so sanguine on the concept. I mean, we're pretty open and above board about who's in NATO, but we don't necessarily know what kind of backdoor deals an outfit like Mother Russia is engaged in. We don't know. We don't know. You know what kind of agreements they might have with other nations if, say, Mother Russia decides to let fly a nuke or two. And I know people think, you know, Putin would never do that. I don't think you can gamble. You know, go all in on one hand of Texas Hold'em on what you think somebody won't do. Because there's a lot of people that lose their ass in Texas Hold'em going all in on what somebody won't do.
Yeah, I know. I played enough Texas Hold'em in my life to to know, and I've played where I'm risking some of my own money. So, and since I am a betting man, I bet he will. Because he takes the Soviet view that Ukraine is part of the Russian Empire. And since the Soviet Union was the inheritor of the empire, and the Russian Federation is the successor to the Soviet Union, that all of Eastern Europe is theirs for the romp around in. So you get this posturing up. If you give anything to Ukraine, there'll be nukes flying. I told you before, Robin, no Russian leader, even the crazy ones, until now, have threatened to use nuclear weapons. Nikita Khrushchev didn't do it, and he put nukes in Cuba, which was a definite provocation. However, I think if the NATO countries look over at Russia and say to the world, a nuclear attack on any other country in the world will be considered an attack on NATO countries.
Article 5. An attack on one is an attack on all.
Yeah, but if they extend that umbrella to any country in the world, which means even Pakistan and India aren't shooting at each other, and both of them have nukes. There's a reason they don't go beyond a certain point.
Well, but
in there,
but there's the deterrent factor is also a rational decisional factor for certain countries. If it is true, okay, just as a for instance, if it is true that Iran is working on a nuclear device, and I'm offering that speculatively because I don't necessarily think it is, but if it is true that Iran is working on a nuclear device, it's not because they want to roast the Israelis. It's because they're next door to a lot of people who hate their goddamn guts. And the only surefire way to keep people away
is a fireball in Mecca.
Well, or a fireball generally, because there's empirically derived data out there that, for instance, a person can say, "Hey, Panama didn't have a nuclear weapon. Look what happened when George W. Bush got tired of his friend Manuel Noriega." You don't see anybody nuking Pyongyang because they got one. And you mentioned India and Pakistan. The way that one keeps the standing there with a gun pointed at each other's heads, and then every now and then they get a little cranky with each other along, in Kashmir. I'm not trying to underplay that conflict. The Chinese and the Indians got into it on that frontier, and
but they would go up so far because they both know the kind of horror that nuclear weapons.
Neither one wants it, right? But if you don't want one of the big countries coming in and stomping one of the little countries, the best bet for the little country is to have is to be a nuclear power. I don't say that because I think that's true. I say that because it is kind of demonstrably true.
It should be pointed out that Ukraine turned its nukes over to Russia with the promise that they would never be invaded.
Truth.
And so let us say that somehow the Ukrainians last more than 45 days, which, we're on, week three, so we're at about the halfway point of that. Beyond 45 days, you're getting into an actual low-grade conflict. Not that it's low-grade to the locals. I'm not saying that. But by and large, the half million or whatever it is troops that Russia's put into the Ukraine is only a fraction of its military. So, and really, Ukraine doesn't have the ability to draw on more manpower. They're already at where they're going to get to. But let's say there's a negotiated standoff like there is in Korea. The Korean War isn't ended. There's just an armistice in place. Let's say there's an armistice between Russia and Ukraine. How fast do you think Ukraine, A, is going to petition for NATO membership, and two, to ask a NATO ally for all, let's say, half a dozen nuclear weapons?
Yeah, but see, hold on, Dave, because part and parcel of any negotiated settlement is the demands of Mother Russia that Ukraine never, ever, 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 ever join NATO.
I see a workaround here. I see a workaround that NATO countries and some non-allied countries set up a framework of a European peacekeeping force. Not just the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, but there again, we run into the run-up to World War One. You have to understand, World War One was nothing but a family argument.
Absolutely
you
true.
The Serbs who were allied to the Russians. And I read some of the diplomatic cables. The Russians were looking at Sarajevo and saying, for God's sake, rein these people in because we don't want war. You don't want war. And there was a 3 or 4 week period that they could have stopped World War One after the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand. Now, in and of itself, while that was a tragic event, that led to a chain of smaller events that looked inconsequential that led to the igniting of Europe. You know, it took, what, almost three months for Putin to get his forces in position for this invasion. And ever since the end of the conflict with the Serbians, there again, the Serbs lead us into a world war. We've been on a run-up to this kind of conflict. I'm surprised it's taken as many years as it has, and it's because there is still a institutional memory of what happened before. People blame Germans.
But there's a lot of institutional memories, though. It seems pretty obvious to me that people like Volodymyr Zelensky have a pretty good handle on that institutional memory, because he said, listen, y'all, you Russian soldiers, you need to throw down your weapons because there's nothing for you here except captivity and death. You need to go home. Because, again, Joey pointed out the anniversary of the Russian Revolution. And the fact of the matter is, the Russian army, as I mentioned previously, threw down its arms and turned around and marched home. And of course, that was helped along by the Bolsheviks. and other revolutionaries, but they didn't. They didn't really want, feel like that they had a dog in the hunt. And so the messaging from Zelensky is exactly that. And I want to go back to what you said about, you know, there's not going to be any more Ukrainian troops, but Putin can draw on others of his. Well, he kind of has to, but he kind of has to weaken himself some. He has to rob Peter to pay Paul. And one of the things that plays into this, and it's a general rule of thumb that's been talked about by a lot of the military experts on the TV, you about need a 10-to-1 advantage. As an attacker, in order to make absolutely certain of your plan. And he doesn't have that right now. And as long as
he's only got like a 3-to-1 so far.
Right. And that's why the Ukrainians have had, because there's an intangible. If you've ever played, you know, stupid war board games, I used to play a lot of Avalon Hill games, and there's a factor.
I used to play Kingmaker all the time.
Oh, diplomacy was a lot of fun. Squad leader, one of their biggest games was Caesar Epic Battle of Alesia, and that would take a day just to set up the board to get started. But anyway, there's an intangible there, where you have to factor in, where you get a defensive advantage because you are there defending your very home and your life. And that factors into that 10-to-1.
Well, there was a game, I think it was an Avalon Hill game called Squad Leader, and it was...
Yeah.
Tank, Squad Leader, and Panzer Leader. Panzer Leader was it was the tank battles of World War II. And one of the advantages that Russians had is the defending units is they could use sewers to move about the board because Soviet troops defending against the German invasion were using things like going down into the sewers and then popping up behind German units and attacking them from the rear. Now you had a chance of getting lost there, but still, that was one of the advantages. The other advantage is the infrastructure the Ukrainians have is already in place. The roads, the hospitals, the airfields, the subways, the telecommunications.
Right, and they, I mean,
all of that.
The middle.
And the Russians have to bring their own.
The Ukrainians are fighting an informational war. I saw an earlier today. About the fact that they are changing, they're taking down their street signs and replacing the street signs with signs that say "fuck you, Russian."
Yeah.
And
but even this conflict is a family conflict with as much intermarriage as there is between Russians and Ukrainians over the last 100 years or more.
Yeah.
You've got people who have relatives on both sides of the conflict.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Alexander Benden's father served in the Red Army before they immigrated from the Ukraine. You know, he talks about it. His father was worried about him blowing the whistle. And I think it was a testament to his character when he told his father that this was the United States, he didn't have to worry about that. Unfortunately, I think the colonel was mistaken in his particular case because he and his brother both suffered. Because of it. But the thing is, this naked cheerleading for Putin has got to disgust even some Republicans.
Oh, some, but not enough. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if you followed the story, Dave, of that Z marking that was on the tanks, and nobody really knows what the Z means, except that, you know, some people speculate that it might mean a word for West, you know, so the Western Army or whatever.
Right.
But it has become a symbol of support inside Mother Russia to the extent that people are painting Z's on their cars and on delivery trucks. And one little shit-eating kid was at the World Cup, World Gymnastics Cup in Doha, Qatar, I think this past weekend. And the governing body of that sport has been called upon to investigate and sanction the little shitbird, because he made a point of putting a Z on his singlet whilst standing next to the Ukrainian competitor.
Oh, gee, lovely!
And I've even seen stories that the Z is beginning to proliferate here in the United States among, you know, typical right-wing maggot POSs.
Well, this is going to sicken you. Evidently, and I saw a picture of this on my news feed, that there was a picture of children in a children's cancer ward that were assembled out in a courtyard and made to form a Z, and a picture was taken with all these terminally ill children to support Mother Russia. And I'm thinking to myself, and then that very next day, there's the attack on the maternity hospital. And it's like the 18th medical facility that's been targeted. Now, one, two, or maybe even half a dozen, yeah, that could be chalked up to accident. By the time you get to 18, it's willful destruction. But once you've committed one war crime, what's a few more?
In for a kopeck, in for a ruble.
Yeah, and we're not talking of the ruble at its current valuation.
I don't think you can value a kopeck with anything short of an electron microscope now.
Well, yeah. I mean, a ruble's about the size of a tick. It might be, I was serious when I said the other day that, you know, with the 15th of March coming up, Vladimir ought to be real careful. If history is to be believed, that the Ides of March might come and visit him eventually, especially when the upper crust of Russian society can't do all the nifty little things like, communicate with their kids in the private boarding schools, or they get sent home because, well, the check just didn't clear. You know, hell, it can't even be cashed at this point. So it's one of those things that, If NATO is serious, they ought to get other European countries to look over at Russia and say, okay, a nuke coming from Russian forces against anyone in Ukraine would be considered a attack on all of Europe. And then NATO would immediately go into Article 5 mode, and it would get into an even more heated clusterfuck than it is now. And I know they're trying to avoid that, but you know the planners have already had to war game this out. That's why you're not seeing a lot of ruffling of feathers among American military spokespeople or even the Europeans. They already know where this is going. And they've dealt with Putin for long enough that they probably got a pretty good profile on it. Remember, psychiatric profiling actually started during World War II when they were profiling Nazi leaders, including Hitler, Goering, Goebbels. All the top Nazis had psychiatric profiles done on them, along with histories. They had dossiers, phone books thick of information on each of these individuals. So I'm sure they've got reams and reams and reams of stuff on dear old Vladimir. And I disagree with George W. Bush. There is no way that he could have seen into Prudy's soul, because when Putin joined the KGB, he had to prove that he had no soul. So, you know, there's no way that he could have seen into Vladimir's soul, because it just does not exist. I've even heard it floated that he may even be dying.
Oh, I have too, and I don't credit any of it, okay?
I don't either. I don't either. I'm like, this is wishful thinking. And even if it wasn't...
I mean, Malloy, who is the godfather of progressive radio and has never, to my knowledge... been pro-war. I mean, I know he's been arrested protesting, you know, our illegal war against the innocent people of Iraq. I was there. But he's saying, you know, we got to take Putin out. And I don't know how we do that, but I understand the impulse.
Well,
I understand the impulse. But again, there were a lot of people over a lot of years in Israel who said, we have to take out Yasser Arafat. The PLO must be destroyed.
And they did.
And
then they get Hamas and wish for the old days of the PLO. Yeah.
Right.
Where the PLO is considered the moderates on the Arabic street. You know. You know, they make the fundamentalist in Saudi Arabia look like outright choir boys by comparison. And it's fine for the Saudis because they can fight their proxy war and, oh, well, our hands are off of it. We have nothing to do with it, but I always find it interesting that God always understands the aggressor. You know, it's happening in Russia. The Saudis have used it. We've used it. Various Europeans throughout the centuries have used it. Those series of wars called the Crusades were nothing but a way to get rid of the the ne'er-do-wells and the troublemakers, and that they'd sit there and go, well, you can either
send the warlord, send the warlord somewhere else, because we know what happened.
You can either be hanged from this tree over here, or you can walk armed into Jerusalem and free the holy city.
Right, and we saw what happened at the end of the Crusades when the so-called companies came back and ravaged, among other places, France. And there were companies, and they were led by captains, and they ran wild over France. It was anarchy, to use the term.
And they were professional soldiers.
And they were professional soldiers and professional killers. Yeah. Hey, Dave, it has been a great conversation. I'm gonna roll here and bring another voice into the conversation. Listen, you take care, and going back to the original topic, reach out to that center. And
I don't
know what else to tell you. I think that's your best bet, so that maybe a woman can talk to her and get through in a way that, no offense, a guy can't.
Yeah, I know. But I don't think I misstepped by telling her, look, this is only escalating. Because I see it escalating, I know it's escalating, and if I don't say that to her, and she knows I'm a fairly honest person, that that I wouldn't be saying this just to be saying it, just to be contrary to what she thinks she wants. But I will reach out to them and see what I should do. And I will talk to you later, Robin.
All right, Dave, you have a good night, and you stay warm, because winter ain't gone yet.
My heater is running really well. So my little space heater can heat my entire apartment all on its own.
Excellent. Well, 16 degrees on Saturday is going to be a real booger.
Oh, God, don't say things like that. My knees are already hurting.
No, I'm going to be standing outside swearing, cussing at individual snowflakes, and I know it.
Well, you know, the only thing you can do is shovel. But remember the first rule of holes, Robin.
When you're in one, stop digging. Yep.
Stop digging.
You take care, Dave.
I will.
All right, bye now.
Bye, Robin.
Our buddy Dave in the blind. A wise and learned man. Let's run over and check in with Todd. Hey, Todd, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm okay. I wish I'd been able to make it to Huntington today, but the weather was just crap. So, and then you know, I'm just tickled pink that the program's lasted this long without Chantel crashing again today. Some days I hot up the mic with my fingers crossed. This was one of them.
Well, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I hear you fine. Are you on your Bluetooth in the car?
Yeah. I want to take it off. I'm just be honest. Is it? I'm trying to get a feel.
No. It's solid. It's solid. You're not unintelligible or anything. When you're on car Bluetooth. There's a more of a room quality to it. You know what I mean? You can kind of hear more of the ambience in the cabin of the automobile.
Oh, so any little thing will come through. Okay.
No, I mean it's more like there's a kind of a whir behind you.
That's all this electricity.
Yeah, or maybe your ventilation system in the car or something like that. But it's good quality.
You know, what you hear?
It's good quality audio.
Well, did you get an electric car, or were you talking about your buddy in San Francisco?
Yeah, that was Matt in San Francisco, who's giggling past gas stations right now.
Yeah, Oh, man. I was curious because the word you hear is the fan that cools the batteries.
Okay.
So, like in this car, they're below the back seat, and I need to clean that fan vent. But I'm just thinking out loud. But I'm going to take this off Bluetooth. I'm glad you told me that.
Well, I mean, you're fine if you're driving hands free. Don't go off Bluetooth. You're good, man.
Well, okay. And I may pop up because of the Bluetooth, only because I am sitting. I'm sitting still. So I think what I want to do is take this off. All right. So now I'm off Bluetooth. Can you
hear me? That's a much more rich and resonant transmission.
Okay. Like I said, I remember when I first used the Bluetooth in this car, I was fiddling with it. I'm not going to get into everything, but there's different ways you can adjust the volume level. But if you go too high, it's probably too tinny. If it's too low, it's not right. But you know what Dave was talking about with this domestic violence? That is some tricky stuff. And I'm not talking about maybe particularly that situation, but I have witnessed female, like a hetero relationship with the female being the batterer. And when the cops come, they don't like to believe
that. Yeah, it happens. It happens in about, under 10% of cases.
That's a lot, though.
Yeah.
I mean, because most people think it doesn't happen at all. But you know, when my friend, the one that I witnessed it, he was small in stature, and she was much larger than he was. And so I'm just saying it does happen. Of course, it's an outlier. It's like saying they're black slave owners. Yeah, of course they are, but we say that just
right.
To say
the indigenous enslavers. Yeah, they existed.
You know, you have to mention it because it's just history. It's true, and. Why I called is because of what's going on in Europe. I'm feeling like now we just keep moving. I guess the global community keeps moving the goalposts. Okay. Because it's like, well, he wouldn't do that. He's just like Trump. Oh, he wouldn't do that. Well, he keeps doing it.
Right, and there's something else to take into consideration here, Todd, and because history nerd. When Rome first got into it with the Carthaginians, it was bloody and it was bad. And Rome eventually wins, and they established terms of surrender and peace. And the Carthaginians had no sooner, chiseled it into stone and hung it up on a building in Carthage, than the Romans started hollering, "Oh, they're breaking the treaty! They're breaking the treaty!" To the point that you get Cato the Elder attending the Roman Senate every blessed day, and it didn't matter if you said, "Hey, Cato, how are you?" or "How's your health, Cato?" or "Lovely morning, isn't it, Cato?" or "Gosh, your wife is beautiful, Cato." He always responded with "Cartago delenda est," which means Carthage must be destroyed. And it got to where nobody invited him to cocktail parties anymore. He was just it was a total bore. But he kept hollering it until the time was ripe, and the Romans said, "Why the hell not?" And went in and reduced Carthage. We did that shit when we started the first Iraq war, Bush War I, and imposed no-fly zones and all kinds of crap. And Republicans kept hollering, "Iraq delenda est."
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Bill Clinton lobbed a few cruise missiles in from time to time. Until, having heard "Iraq delenda est" enough, Bush War II came along. It was the same damn thing. It was so frustrating to watch it all unfold and know some little bit about ancient history and recognize that, once again, history was not repeating itself, but it was damned well rhyming. And so I don't think the so-called negotiated peace would basically let Putin have the shit that he stole in 2014 and then he insists that Ukraine must promise to never, ever, 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 ever join NATO, and NATO would also have to promise to never, ever, ever, ever invite Ukraine in. But the problem is, the minute that any Ukrainian was seen talking to a member of NATO, Putin or one of his apparatchiks would be barking and grunting and hooting, "Ukraine, Delenda S, they violated the treaty."
Yep.
The word Lebensraum. Remember Lebensraum?
Yeah.
Living room.
Living room. Yep.
We're not trying to conquer Europe. We just need some Lebensraum.
Just some little space. You're a little too close. I can smell your breath.
Yeah, so I got some Lebensraum. But then he wanted more Lebensraum. It's the same shit.
You did an excellent, I thought, like I'm some kind of arbiter of judgment, but you did an excellent job, I think, of explaining it. Because you got a whole generation of people who really think those rumors were true about the first Iraq war and the babies and all that. That's still in their head.
It was absolute unmitigated bullshit.
Propaganda is not new. I believe his history would indicate that, you know, folks have been using propaganda for a very long time. The Persians used propaganda.
Sure.
But this Putin that we're dealing with, from what I've seen, he's a little different. You know, I understand what David Ablein was saying about the psychological profiles. Everyone does that. That's old hat. We know that, but this is a different Putin, and you have to understand his situation. And I'm going to concede the point. I'm going to try to write a nice essay here, so I'm going to concede the point. Yes, NATO did get a little closer than maybe was originally agreed to. You know, but that was a changing world, and those folks they wanted to live in a Western-style society. They voted, and that's what happened. You know, people voted, and that's what they wanted. And just like, because to me, honestly, it looks like if he were trustworthy, you know, now that he's already in there and fucked everything up, give him, you know, part of Eastern Ukraine that he's close to, since he's already fucked it up and been such a jackass. But now he's shown that he's not worthy to live in the world society at this point.
No, I mean, as Stephen New York pointed out the other night, he's already well past war crimes. He's at crimes of aggression. And there's an old story. I remember being somebody telling it to me back in elementary school, and I think it may have had to do with a property holder from the 1800s in the area where I grew up. And everybody thought that he was just an acquisitive, land-grabbing asshole. And they'd say, "You want to own it all, don't you?" And he'd say, "No, I don't want to own it all. I just want to own whatever land borders mine." But if you stop to think about that for a half a second, there's always going to be land that borders his, and he wants it.
That's a good play on words. That's a brilliant
statement. And if he takes Ukraine, he's going to hunger for Poland. And the reason he's so pissed off about Poland, Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania being in NATO, Todd, is because his essential hunger is to recreate the old Soviet satellite states, whether it be Georgia, Chechnya, the various, Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan, and then the Baltic states. Hell, he'd like to have Finland. But, you know, not just for the prestige of you know, reestablishing the honor of Mother Russia, but because he can plunder them.
That's right.
The Soviets, the Soviets wanted those satellite states and what became the after World War II, the Warsaw Pact states, because they opened a spigot that ran from those satellite states into a catchment basin in the goddamn Kremlin. This is some of this is not just aggression for the sake of aggression.
No,
it's economics.
It's economics, and I'm going to say it again. And see, and in addition, you know, he is really not. I don't think he's the same. He was never good. I mean, this guy is a poisoner, poison gas, and anything wrong, you know, he breaks the rules. You know, to do whatever he wants to do. The means justify the ends, justify the means to him. And we're all stupid, and we're just weak because, you know. In other words, he's like, you knew I was a snake. He's that kind of person. He's like, well, you're stupid enough to mess with me, so you know how I am. And I'm being very casual with my conversation, but I'm going to amp this up in a second. Notice how far away he stays from the people he's supposed to trust. Because, see, he's a poisoner. See, he's putting himself in a – he knows he's putting himself in a corner at this point. There's no way out for him now, which is exactly why it, you know, if something happened to him, it wouldn't be an awful thing, because given all these circumstances, he will in fact use a nuclear weapon. He has nothing to lose.
Huh?
And what you're saying about the plundering, that's exactly right. That's exactly what he wants, because those were his formative years when, you know, Soviet Union, you know. Imagine you're growing up and you become a lieutenant colonel in the KGB. That's a big deal. That's a big deal. You know, and we have to remember now, in the modern era, his culture, those folks, they were at the, you know, the apex of the social sciences. They understand how they understood more than anyone else how the human mind works.
Sure.
You know, they were in that shit early. You know, we're not dealing with no dummies here. Except he's crazy now.
You know, there's a word for what Pootie does. It's kleptonomics. He is a thief. He's a burglar. He's a footpad. He's a cut purse. He's an international highwayman.
Wow, what a term. Are you going to start playing Willie Nelson and Chris Christopherson? But, yeah. I mean, my God, like you said earlier, you know, when people start, who have power? See, you gotta look. Sometimes you have to write things down on paper, or you know, type it on the computer, and just to look at it clinically. This is what the man has done in the past. This is how he's behaving now. So, what do you really expect in the future? Okay, he's already poisoned people. Done dastardly things. Can't take any criticism.
Murdered people.
Murder people. Like really, if you want to murder somebody, get your henchmen to capture them, you know, get them in a chair or whatever in a room, and then strangle them to death with your own hands, if you really are that angry at somebody. If not, you're just a fucking piece, you know, you're a coward. So that he's engaging in these types of activities. Now, what? Bombing hospitals? I mean, apartment buildings? All you see is these women with children, you know, this is insane. And it's disruptive. See, this is the thing. He is actually doing what Trump did to this country. Okay, he didn't like the way the game was going. You know, he was losing the chess game. So, you know, what he does, he picks up the board and just smashes all the pieces and says, oh, put it back together. But we can't, the people say. Well, that's because it was fraudulent. It was a fraudulent game.
Yeah. Well, do you remember that? And it's been making the rounds, the clip of George and Kramer from Seinfeld, and they're continuing their game of Risk.
I didn't see
that. And they're on the subway. Oh, God. Let me see if I can find it. Because it was decades ago now. But it feels very much like prophecy.
But, you know, you can learn a lot about life playing Risk. What, is that game still around?
Oh, hell yes.
Okay. Well, good.
Let me see. This thing goes here. This is a shorter clip.
Good God, man. Who are your interns?
My DJ brain is my intern. So they've been and if you played it, you know the damn thing can go on for a couple of days if you've got good players. And so they continue. They start out playing at Jerry's and they wind up on the subway with the game board still intact. And that's when this happens.
Are you sure you know where the impound yard is?
Oh, stop stalling. Come on.
Oh, Newman and Kramer, not George.
I can't think it. It's all this noise.
Or is it because I've built a stronghold around Greenland? I've driven you out of Western Europe? And I've left you teetering on the brink of complete annihilation?
I'm not beaten yet. I still have armies in the Ukraine.
The Ukraine. You know what the Ukraine is? It's a sitting duck. A road apple, Newman. The Ukraine is weak. It's feeble. I think it's time to put the hurt on the Ukraine.
I come from Ukraine. You not say Ukraine weak?
Yeah, well, we're playing a game here, pal.
Ukraine is game to you? How about I take your little Boris?
So what happens visually is the guy who says, Ukraine is game to you. Ukraine not weak. And smashes, 10 hours of playing Risk into a million tiny pieces.
I remember that now. I can see it in my mind. I remember that. Yeah. Well, look, man, they're very sensitive. Ukrainian. See, well, it's so funny. No, seriously, like honestly, like when I get the time just to listen to what I want to listen to as I go to sleep, that archive.org, right? You can listen to CBS covering D-Day as it happens. At first, they think it's Russian propaganda. Okay, and then news reports come in, and then, it goes through the whole progression, and they talk about, we should the Soviets, oh, no, they're out of control. We have to do something now. This is early on. This is like, they're not even in Berlin yet. See, because people have already figured out what, the Soviets want to take over Europe. This has always been the plan.
Yeah, I mean, there's a certain not National Geographic, paranoia because of centuries and centuries and centuries of people just barreling over all of that flat land and heading for Moscow.
And heading for Moscow. And you got to do it at the right time of year because it's so fertile. It just turns, like goop. The goop time is coming. Maybe. How does that work? Spring
there's
rain?
There's a line in the house. It's this massive song called Roads to Moscow. Al Stewart did it. And there's a line where he says, gluing the tracks of our tanks to the ground while the sky filled with snow. And all that I ever was able to see, the fire in the sky silhouetting the smoke on the breeze, and it's about the Russian front in the Second World War, and Putin waited until it wasn't complete gunk to try to invade through.
Yep. Yep. And now, wait, and it's planting season. See, this is what I'm saying. He's too far gone. I don't know how. But see, once again, I think we have a good chance, maybe. And they were talking about this on Morning Joe, but we'd already figured this out. And it's happening. The young people there, they can see what the old folks can't see because they know how to use VPNs and different platforms to get out electronically. And, you know, they want Western lifestyle, most of them, a lot of them. Now, you always have the Trumpers over there. They just, they want to make Russia great again, all that kind of bullshit. And nothing you can do about that. They're always going to be there, the glory days. And see, once again, that's Putin. He's ruminating. He's just like, this is my vision. This is my vision. But now it's just, he's lost it. Who does this shit?
Well, but see, I think we're going too easily, Todd, to the idea that he's lost it. I don't see anything to indicate that he's lost it.
I think
with Nitwit Nero in office, he spent all the, I've seen people say, well, why didn't he do it while Trump was in office? And of course, all the Republicans say, well, that's because Trump was a strong leader. I mean, y'all wouldn't give him a chance, but he's a strong leader, and he just said what the way it was, and he told Putin, "Don't you dare!" And Putin was scared of him. Bullshit.
He was scared.
He was scared.
Give him a chance.
Yeah, but see, the thing is, what happened was that was a different phase of the conflict, and he used Trump. He used Trump to try to weaken NATO. And NATO, he thought, was irretrievably fractured and could not unify. And frankly, that's why they worked so hard to put Trump in office and keep him in office. Because old Cold Warriors like Biden and Hillary knew Putin for who the hell he was and knew that the only thing he understood was force met with force, whether it be diplomatic or martial. And so the Trump nightmare years were years in which he was laying groundwork. And there are a few of these so-called experts that you see on the multimillionaire for-profit media who say that the problem is that Putin thought Trump had accomplished or was able to accomplish more than he actually could. And he made the mistake that people make of believe, anybody who's ever done business with Trump has learned the hard way that you are going to get fucked. And Putin's fucked. He thought he was taking apart NATO piece by piece and that he would then be able to just gobble up, especially the former Warsaw Pact states. And it didn't play out that way.
I think that you are exactly right. I totally agree with that analysis. He thought Trump was going to be his Trump card and he was done. That was going to be it. I mean, they, you know what I mean, right?
Yeah.
Trump was the conduit to soften it to make this possible.
Exactly.
Because you see what RT, I was laughing, man, like 2 days ago, what, RT is like, oh, we're packing our shit up. You know what thieves do when everything is stolen?
Move on. I mean, do you remember the complaint of Donald Rumsfeld about attacking Afghanistan? There's no fun shit left there to bomb. That's the burglar saying, I got nothing I can work with here.
All the silver's gone.
Yeah, everything's gone. The doorknobs are gone. How am I supposed to pick a lock when there ain't no locks?
Nothing here. They packed this shit up. Their job was done. They did their job.
Yeah.
See, they did their job. And that, I think that that says a lot. You know, you add all these things up. Boris Epstein, Maria Butina.
Oh, by the way, there's been a Maria Butina. I know you like to keep up with Maria.
Well, she's so special.
Maria, Maria, Maria. See, I'm singing. We're quarter in. We have raised precisely 75 cents this evening. Thank you very kindly, Jeremy in Vermont.
Yeah.
And so I don't feel any compunction against singing. But there has, in fact, been a Maria Butina sighting. And it's the damnedest thing. I have here a brief video of Maria, who, by the way, is now a member of the Duma.
Mm-mm.
Oh, yeah. She is a convicted.
Oh, my God. Wait a minute. That's a fucking show right there. That's damn. Oh, my God. Okay.
She was convicted in the United States of being a Russian spy, so that's not alleged, that's a fact. And so I don't know if there's any audio with this. Let's see. It's video of Maria Butina. She's got her strawberry blonde hair in a long braid draped over her right shoulder. A little white peplum waisted blouse and a little jacket and straight navy blue skirt. I don't know why I'm talking about what she's wearing, except for the fact because that fashion matters to me now.
That's what I was about to say. I think you like her outfit. That's the
yeah,
way
she's wearing a lipstick that's way too red for her pale features. and so, in the video, she points to the camera, then points to her own eyes, meaning, watch this. And, of course, you've got the heartbeat in the background. And she's in this kind of like little girl bedroom with hanging. I don't know. It looks like what happens when you haul the sails up on a square rigged sailing ship. You know, it forms the little arcs, the little drapes. It's like she's got the mosquito netting up or something. But. So we continue. She takes her jacket off. She very carefully folds it and lays it flat on the table, takes a white marker out, and on the lapel draws the letter in white on her gray jacket, draws the letter.
Работайте, братья. Мы с вами навсегда.
Draws the letter Z, which has become the Russian symbol for their slaughter of Ukraine, and then says something in Russian to the camera, as you heard. Now, I know you know this, but just for the sake of filling in the, let's remember, she wasn't just convicted of being a Russian spy in the United States. She was actively involved in trying to create Holy Russian version of National Rifle Association from the United States of America. And not only that, she was also, and I don't know of any other way to put this, might as well be straight up about it, she was also actively fucking a Republican lawmaker or a Republican politician.
Yep. I mean, it's only true.
And remember, a guy associated with the Tennessee Senator Marsha, goodness, Blackburn, dude was making gun videos about Second Amendment freedoms in the frozen wastes of Mother Russia. We for, you know, we live in this goddamn 24-hour news cycle, and we forget so much, Todd.
Robin, I have a question.
Yes, sir.
Now you mentioned the NRA. Now what generally, what political party in the United States is affiliated with the NRA?
Generally, the Republican Party.
Okay, so we checked that box. And you see, this if the media is so liberal, I mean, this is some damning evidence. This is just damning facts. This is empirical. This is empiricism. Why isn't this? This should be on the news just to remind mugs, because, like you said, memory is so short. Because Steve in Georgia and I, every morning we hear, we're getting.
Well,
man,
I was hoping. I was hoping. I was hoping we might get a Washington Journal update.
Well,
has it been bad, Todd? Has it been bad?
It's bad. How bad is it?
How bad is it?
It's so bad that people are still not understanding that the Keystone Pipeline was nowhere near finished, number one.
Right.
Number two, the little shit they did wasn't working right because it was leaking already. Maybe. Or maybe the other pipeline, so maybe that's not powerful.
Three.
But so let's go three. Yeah, let me move on. Four looks too stupid. But three, it has nothing to do with gasoline. It's a different type of oil.
It's bitumen.
Bitumen. See, folks, you and I, who went, you know, we're roughly the same age. I'll never forget in chemistry class, like, oh, there's something called shale oil. I was like, what? Oh, you know, it was a whole lot. In other words, you had to. It took so much energy to get the oil out that, you know, we could do it, but nobody was doing it because it was just too.
And it just happens to only be worth doing in North Dakota or you know, Alberta. It only happens to be worth doing if oil is over $100 a barrel.
Right.
Oops.
And if native people live near, because, you know, they don't care. You know, they like poison. But this is, in other words, this is, so it, to distill it down, since we're talking about oil, this type of oil is thick and nasty, and it can't be used for gasoline. It's a whole different type of oil. It's not. So when you hear these people say, well, just turn on the Keystone. Yeah, well, but you try explaining that to somebody. I gave up. I don't even, you know what, I don't know nothing. You know what I say? I don't know. I mean, it depends on my mood, I suppose. What are we? But see, this is what I'm saying, man. The media should be between Butina and the oil. Make this shit clear. I mean, it's really easy. Bold letters. Keystone is not nearly built. Keystone will not lower your gasoline prices. Keystone is dangerous. That's the other part.
If you did it all at once, if you did all of the tar sands oil at once, Todd, it would be about 6 weeks worth of oil.
Wow. See, I didn't, that's a terrible, that alone, that'll sink the boat right there.
Yeah, it ain't shit. And we're going to wreck the aquifer of millions of square miles of, wait a minute, the homeland for that?
What was it, Ogallala?
The Ogallala Aquifer.
See, that's what I don't understand.
And I don't know what it takes to finally explain it to a goddamn maggot, but you that black goo.
Trying to clean that shit up.
You can't drink that shit. I mean, it'll you up faster than, I don't know, a big old swig of aquarium cleaner with a horse paste chaser.
See, these people think we're dependent now because all this petroleum-based transportation, this is just, you know, this shit is temporary anyway. This shit was, the first cars were electric. The first motherfucking cars were electric.
Well, that and steam.
And steam. Well, yeah, okay, right, steam. Okay, right, that's true. So all this, but I just, you know, I was talking with a very close person today, not just hours ago. I said, why? You know, because I drive a hybrid. And I mean, people get upset. Some people get very upset. Hybrid, or they don't understand the difference anyway. There's type of people, you know, hybrid, electric, it's all the same stuff. But what is the deal with that shit?
Yeah, how do you mean?
Well, why would you be upset when I'm actually helping the country? I'm using less oil.
Oh, but you're not helping the country. Using less oil doesn't help the country. That's you. Using less oil is communist.
Okay, but I'm lessening the dependence on foreign energy.
Jesus Christ, when you don't drive a big old rolling coal a diesel pick-em-up truck, makes Jesus real sad.
Okay, see, this is looking like a conspiracy to me now, and it has been for quite some time. You remember, when we were at war with Iraq, it's been in vogue. These big SUVs that people can't navigate a goddamn Ford Escort, and it ain't goodbye these damn...
Once upon a time, back when the rusty red pickup truck was a thing, and that was a Dodge Ram 2500 series.
You missed that
three quarter ton pickup truck with an 8.5 foot bed, and I could parallel park that thing.
That's what I'm talking about.
Most people can't. There wasn't any backup camera.
Go ahead.
There is only parallel park or do not parallel park. There is no try.
Either you can do it or you can't. That's right. That's a cowbell.
Well, thank you. But
we know these people. We know these people cannot do that.
Yeah, I know. Brother Deacon Asa just said, oh, for fuck's sake, Kincaid, quit bullshitting us. They drank bleach to shield them from the Rona. What makes you think they wouldn't drink that black goo to shield them from thirst? Precisely. And by the way, Steve in New York with something I think is salient. The height of unintended consequences. I don't think it's any secret that COVID tanked Trump's re-election chances. No COVID. No Biden. No Biden. No NATO. That sinks all the way to the bone.
That's kind of deep, isn't it?
Yeah. And apparently, Greg, and it's also weird to me, and I'm not some sort of peacenik. I mean, I hate war. But I'm also a student of the art of war. And the first rule of the art of war is try not to go to war. Everything goes to shit when you go to war. You know, Sun Tzu says that. And then... you know, all the commentators below Sun Tzu say, well, what Sun Tzu was saying is that war will fuck shit up. And another sage says, when we talk about fucking shit up, we mean things aren't going to work right anymore. And it goes from there. But rule one is don't go to war. So it's kind of weird to hear people be so eager to run to war. This is not to say I'm criticizing it. It's just weird to hear liberals and progressives saying it.
Okay.
I mean, I remember when the progressive wing of the Democratic Party had a total fanboy, fangirl crush on Dennis Kucinich, because when he was running for president in 2004, he said, I will establish, if elected president, I will establish a cabinet-level Department of Peace. Because peace is harder work than war is. And, oh, my God, our little hearts went pitter-pat. Because it kind of made sense. After years and years and years of old warmongers like Henry Kissinger,
mm-hmm.
George Shultz, it was actually refreshing to hear somebody say that peace actually takes work.
It's called diplomacy.
And now, though, well, that's all gone. We want to fill the skies over Ukraine with a NATO no-fly zone that includes jets from Germany that can't fucking fly.
No. And MiGs
from the Soviet era. And I don't know, maybe a few low-mileage A-10 Warthogs to take out the occasional convoy. And we're groovy with it.
I'm not. No. Okay. I think maybe what a lot of people think is that, you know, maybe not go to war, but take action. There's a difference, like, and it all ends up being war, but maybe not the war that we might think about as war.
Yeah, but once you start, it's not the war you wanted. I mean, again, I'm channeling old dead Donald Rumsfeld. Once you start, it's not the war you want, it's the war you get.
Well, Putin is just pushing. He's pushing this issue.
I think he wants us in because then he's. I suspect there's a plan B that says, you know, once they do something, then fuck, we're rolling into Latvia, Estonia, Lithuania, and Poland.
Because he's going to say, "You see, I told you. You see what they're doing, right? That's what he's going to do." Which is exactly why we have to use what is our strongest skill, which is subversive. You see, small teams. In other words, we already had.
I mean, I think the Ukrainians. I'm old, but I can't tell you how many times I've sat and watched that horrible, horrible movie, The Battle of the Bulge.
We all have. Come on.
Robert Shaw was such an actor. And he was I don't care if it's Jaws or Battle of the Bulge. But he was Colonel something in the Battle of the Bulge. You know, Henry Fonda was in it. And Dano from Hawaii, it would go on to be Dano from Hawaii 50 was in it. And there's a scene early on where the crafty, inscrutable Nazis change the signs of the roads in Belgium and manage to, like, divert Allied forces. And right. at the end of it, Dano looks at the Nazi and says, "Does the road to Malmedy still lead to Anblev?" And grease guns him. Because the Germans came through and were changing all the street signs.
Right.
Or all the road, you know, all the road signs. And I swear to God, I think Pootie, you know, he doesn't have that much to do, really. I swear to God he's sitting around watching old American movies. And the next thing he'll tell the Russian people is, "They are changing road signs just like Nazis did during Battle of Bulge in 1944. And the one that grabs me more than anything is this mysterious Z that is popping up all over Russia as a symbol of Russian patriotism.
Yes.
And I think Putin's been. I don't like having anything in common with Vladimir Putin. I mean, Greg Aspott in Texas has more in common. Governor Meemaw in Alabama has more in common with Putin than I do. That awful self-hating woman in Missouri who wants to keep women from being able to cross state lines for an abortion, she's got more in common with Putin than I do. The Idaho state legislature that wants to make it a goddamn felony for parents to cross out of Idaho to get transgender affirming care for their children, she's got more in common with Vladimir Putin than I do. But I've got a suspicion that Putin's in his bunker somewhere, and he's got the in-laws on a loop. Richard, the moment that Peter Falk says, "Don't say anything about his scar." and Alan Arkin says, "Okay, And Richard Libertini as General Garcia opens the door, and the first words out of Alan Arkin's mouth are... A Z? A Z?
A Z? It's that Z.
And I watch movie because Peter Falk plays expert CIA agent. Is like many CIA agents I knew back in day in Dresden.
Oh man! Oh, you know, like he's in the bar, right? Peter Falk is. And the cabbie, you know, Peter's having coffee, the cabbie is having whatever he's having.
Is this freeze-dried? It's very good.
Is it? Very good. It's very, yeah. You know, it's good. Not as good in right. And he goes, you're CIA? Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm the classic agency type. Squat, strong, low to the ground. You interested in joining? It's a great benefits package. I tell you, it's a great benefits package. Of course, not getting killed. That's the key to the benefits package.
That's the key to the benefits package. Oh, shit. You know, what the fuck else is he doing? And then, but think about it. Isn't there something called War Z? Because that Z is very, it's a flat. It's
well, right, and then there's also World War Z. Remember that horrible movie?
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. World War Z, right. That's what I meant, right. That was years ago. That was in the 90s or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, aughts.
Okay. Which, by the way, wait a minute. Let's do a time check here. Well, do you understand? This is 20 motherfucking two.
Yeah.
We are a quarter of the way almost through this fucking century.
Yeah. I was doing some in the head ciphering the other day. And just kind of going, wait a minute, let's see, 1939 minus 2022, okay, 2 and 7, hey, that's 7, that's 83 years short. Just didn't even make it a century before somebody decided to turn Europe back into an abattoir. Oh, this is some genius. Darlene in Connecticut just said, and to think, if you were living your authentic life, when you were parallel parking that little red pickup truck with the 20-foot bed of yours, 8 and a half, Darlene, any men who saw you would have thought you were the hottest thing going and would have been throwing their phone numbers on little pieces of paper at you. Oh! And that's despite the fact you were driving a fucking Dodge. Oh, that's cold. That was an awesome truck. That thing, the only thing that could kill that was a pill head doing 60 miles an hour into the stopped still back of that truck. On another note, though, and this is cowbell. Well, cowbell for the whole note, but on another note, yeah, Z. Like Q here in the U.S.?
Yeah.
I hadn't pondered. I did that, but not, that makes actually more sense than, Darlene, than I would like for it to.
Oh, shit, this is the end. End of your alphabet, baby.
Z. Because, I mean, some of them have, like, Vs on them and stuff, but that Z, I mean, when you've got little Russian gymnast boys putting it on their singlets, is that what you call a Russian gymnast thing? A boy gymnast is the singlet? I don't know. That's for wrestling. I know that much.
That's out of my purview.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's a leotard for the girls, but is it a leotard for the guys? I don't know. By the way, back to cars for a minute. Tom in sunny San Rafael says, it's Prius season and EV season. Hi, Todd. It's a mystery. It seems to me that I'm keeping gas prices down for the gas guzzlers. Because you're a giver, Tom. You're a giver. And you're chuckling. You and Todd and Matt in San Francisco are all just chuckling past gas stations.
You know, I will never forget though when I was at the local dealership, right? And this guy's trying to talk me out of buying a hybrid. Like I found the one I wanted.
Well,
like,
you know, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people think they want one, but I tell you what, once they drive one, they don't want one. I can't tell you how many times I've been told that here.
Shit. That's the best. I said to him, I said,
you don't want one in the kind of weather we get here. I mean, all you got to do is turn that heater on. That battery's just deader than shit. And God knows you don't want to climb. You don't want to climb these hills around here in no electric car. But I tell you what, Randy Radar reminded me of something a minute ago. Have you seen the new Ford F-250 all electric?
Man,
I've seen it. Yes, I have. And
they're all coming out, Blazer.
Do I have a girl crush on that truck? I got a girl crush on that truck.
That's a nice looking truck. Isn't that the one? By
I don't want it. I don't want it in that blue though. Black or white. Yeah, I don't want it in arrest me red. But a 400 mile range. Ooh, well, doggies, can you imagine how much that's going to cost when it comes time to replace that battery? Because Ford's not going to put no 100,000 mile warranty on that truck battery.
Well, that's the caveat right now. I would say I did a lot of research before I made a purchase. That's why I went with the Toyo, because they've been doing it now for a very long time. And I was talking with people, and yeah, you look at the reviews and. You know, all Americans, they're just catching up, kind of, still a little bit. So, you know, look at the reviews if you want to invest. But, and it's, you know, they're not that expensive. Now they are, but it's too late now. You should have done this 2 years ago. But the thing is, these people, they don't know what to say now, because you slap this baby in the second gear to start off, or first if you really want to hurt their feelings. And you know, you're beyond the speed limit in like 2 seconds, and then you have to slow down. You have to hit the brakes so you don't get a ticket, and they're just getting started. You know, if you choose to drive that way. That's the thing. You have the freedom to drive. Freedom! Any way you want.
Freedom!
You see? I can drive like a golf cart, man, and do 26 miles an hour and get, 62 miles to the gallon, 70, who knows? Or I can drive, you know, normally, or I can drive, you know, aggressively. It's there when you need it. But why not? What the fuck? I just don't get it. What is wrong with these people?
Well, I mean, that has been the nature of the inquiry for almost 20 years now at this program. What the fuck is wrong with those people?
Oh, I sound terrible.
Well, no. There was an episode of the old Bob Newhart show, the one from the 70s. Remember, he was a psychologist, of course. He had a chance to give up his private practice for a cushy corporate job with an insurance company. And I just remember, for some reason or another, laughing my ass off when I saw the motto. It was the company was like Woodman's Insurance Company of America, and there was a portrait of the founder when he goes into the corporate headquarters for his interview, and underneath, you know, the guy's name with his signature quote, "We got to insure these guys," and it's kind of the same thing. Yeah, what the is wrong with them?
That's the best he could do?
We got to keep these guys from sawing their own arms off.
We got to insure these guys. Okay. Because, yeah, they're in the most dangerous. That the lumber industry is the most dangerous industry. But God almighty. You know what, Robin? I mean, seriously, like, this is... okay, so now's the time when we question these people. The Russia hoax. I'm still hearing that. Steve is still hearing that. Steve in Georgia.
Yeah.
Right?
Russia.
Right. It's like, okay, so what's Russia doing that? Well, it's Biden's fault. Okay, the attention span, but it doesn't matter because, you know, folks make their minds up, and it's really hard to penetrate. It's hard to penetrate. You know, I had a long conversation with a patron today who I probably wouldn't hang out with outside of work. Right? They would, you know, they just wouldn't stop talking. So, I had to engage. And I had things to do. And I pulled their materials and they just talk. I'm like, and he was shocked that I knew what I knew. You know, I was like, well, do you know? I was like, yeah, I know.
And after a while, I just stopped, you know, I made him the professor. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, Bub, you tell me.
So, right. Right. And...
Explain it to me like I'm six.
Right, because how would I know? What do I know? I only work here. You know, how would I know that? Yeah, how would, the hell would I know that? Right. That's such an affront. That's what you can call me a nigger all day long, but don't tell me I'm stupid. You know, then you got a problem.
That's a for you to say that. That's a thing.
I mean that. Oh, I mean that from the soles of my feet. I'm serious. What the fuck am I, 12? You can call me. I don't give a care. You can call me a corn biscuit head, whatever, digger. I don't give a fuck. But you will respect me, and you will, you know, you will do that.
Well, then there's also the old philosophical exercise called fuck around and find out.
Well, that's the second tier. Yeah. That's right.
By the way, why do they still think that? Stephen New York answers and says, a man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. And that goes hand in glove with the old, it's hard to get a man to believe something when not believing, when his paycheck depends on him not believing it. Or it's hard to get a man to understand something when his paycheck depends on him not understanding it. And by the way, as to the red pickup truck, Steve adds, I'm going to disagree. Tall woman driving red pickup truck, while there may have been many men throwing their numbers at you, a woman in a red pickup truck who lives in rural America might have led to as many women throwing their numbers at you. Yeah, well, that's a possibility. That could happen. Thanks to both of you. I'm deeply affirmed at the idea of anybody throwing anything at me that aren't rocks.
It feels good, right?
Yeah. Oh my God, we're way past time to quit, and I know Podbean's going to screw me over at the end of the month. But this is just a little observation. I promise. You know, this little studio is not just, you know, a zoo or anything or an entomological exhibit, but I have never seen a baby ladybug before. And this is one of those orange Asian ones. And she is crawling across the top of my iPad right now, and she is tiny. Itsy-bitsy. I mean, a third the size of a BB. Tiny. And she's just making her way as best she can. And I'm not going to mess with her. I hope she just gets where she's going. And I'm not particularly fond of the Asian ladybugs because they don't do the same thing that the red ladybugs do.
Really? I didn't know.
No, they don't. They just kind of like, and that's the thing, they kind of just hang out in your walls. I mean, they don't go out and eat other insects in the garden or anything.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. Okay.
But this is unless it's a tiny species of it, this is a little newborn or new hatched or whatever. And she's just wandering. We have to maintain some wonder in this life. And that's pretty amazing. I don't think she can fly yet. She's just crawling. And, well, I wish her the best. Because if I have to come back as some sort of, like, ladybug or something, I hope some... a big old giant creature won't just flick the fuck out of me off into oblivion. Sorry, that was kind of heavy. Kind of Buddhist. Or Hindu or something. I don't know. Well, thank you, Steve. Sue says, March 9th, 2022 program, one for the ages. This was a good one tonight. That ladybug. She's traveling down her own road, watching the signs as she goes. That's from the Madonna Ray of Light album. Well, she has already transited the top edge of the iPad, and now she's almost all the way down the side edge to the ground. Randy Radar says, insects love heat. Don't let her nest in your laptop's keyboard. No, this is an iPad, so we're good. But it is time to get out of here. Todd, thank you so much for jumping in on the conversation. Dave got us started, and then you jumped in, and it was just magic. Okay. Could be. Brother Deaconacia says, Asian ladybugs don't come that small. Well, have you ever asked an Asian ladybug? I mean, that's a little judgmental. That's a Russian spy bot crawling across your iPad.
Damn. That's the biggest-ass computer virus you ever seen.
Oh, honey, get off the iPad, okay? Just go crawl around on the desk a little bit. And to think I can do this without even, you know, there's no better living through chemistry with this. This is just me. And no, baby, don't go back up the side edge.
See, I'm concerned about
children.
Does it have a jack? Does it? That's an iPad. It's all Bluetooth.
Yeah. No. It's got a charging port, but it's busy right now. She can't get into it.
Well, that's good. Well, you need to go, and we all. I just want to say thank you for putting up with my nonsense. You know,
no nonsense at all. It was a great conversation, and as ours so frequently. One of the things about which I'm most fortunate is the fact that I get to have intelligent and sometimes madcap and zany conversations with so many intelligent, madcap and zany people, and that's nothing short of wonderful. Because, well, tune into Washington Journal some morning, Todd, and see how much see how much intelligent conversation you hear going on there. Oh, really? Wait, you do. You've told us about it. The answer is zero.
Hard work.
Taking them for the team. Todd, take care of yourself, my friend.
You too, and take care, family.
All right, later. That's our buddy Todd down in South Carolina, Stan, where it's no doubt warmer than it is here, and it's a toasty 61 degree. No naked radio today. 61 degrees in the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. So we will close today, having raised 75 cents. Thank you, Jeremy. And that means tomorrow we will be at $949.25. Take note, Brother Deacon. I'll probably forget that by tomorrow. 949.25. And Stephen New York does still have a challenge on the table. For anybody who pops in $150, he will send 5 pounds of gourmet Zabar's coffee. You send me your address, I send my address to Steve. And then it goes from there. And Steve sends you the coffee. And if I was to sit here and start, just because it's expensive life. I don't want to just sit here and list all the bills, because, like I said, we had a near $600 power bill last month. And power bills usually aren't like that, but that's that clean coal-fried electricity for you. So any help is awesome help. And thanks to all of our PayPal and Patreon subscribers. Thanks to our a la carte contributors. Thank you so much. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatsoever manner you may choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Brother Bishop Steve and Georgia Stan this evening. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Brand new, fresh Malloy on the way at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is, of course, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. I hope you're staying safe. The flooding is worrisome up over down there. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And now, proudly, a union shop. Please stay safe. Do not buy into the hype that the Rona is over. Keep that mask handy anywhere you're in proximity to somebody who or crowds of people you don't know. masks, hand washing still applies. Use your hand sanitizer. Maintain your social distance 15 to 20 feet, just like Paul from Parts Unknown always says. And, of course, if some little strawberry blonde member of the Russian Duma comes towards you saying, "Put Z on the lapel of jacket," avoid that convicted spy like the plague. Because she is. Later.